Show, another exciting edition, no doubt. Broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. You can join us in the chat room there if you want to, you know, have some fun, meet some cool people, or better yet, just give us some questions and such, you know, because I find there's quite a lot of bright people out there, and the more bright people you have in a conversation, the better the conversation gets. In my opinion, and I could be wrong. Maybe it's just a stupid idea. My very special guest today, and we'll be taking callers the entire 2 hours here. For those of you who want to ring in, the number is 218-339-8525. Sorry, my very special guest today is Mark Passio, former priest at the Church of Satan. Mark, welcome to the program again.
Vinny, thanks so much for having me back. It's a pleasure to be here.
How many times have we had a chat now? This must be like the fourth time or something.
Yeah, I think it is.
Because when you came on the other time, first time, I think it was just like, you know, it just really clicked, man. And I think we agree on a lot of stuff. And it's not like
absolutely.
I'm going to say anything, but, you know, technically neither are you anymore.
You're going to be making an appearance on my radio show this coming Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
On Oracle Broadcasting. I'll be interviewing Vinny on my program called What on Earth is Happening.
And Mark's website, ladies and gents, is whatonearthishappening.com, I think, isn't it?
That's correct.
For those who are unfamiliar with your backstory, could you kind of lay it out for them?
Sure. Well, very briefly, my background comes from involvement in the dark occult. I was, as you said, a priest in the Church of Satan until I had an awakening in conscience and decided that this is really the institution, Satanism, dark occultism, that lies behind the diminishing human freedoms and the dynamic of that taking place in our world. These dark occultists have infiltrated just about every aspect of society and every one of our institutions, and they're really the ones who are calling the shots behind the seemingly enthroned political powers. Occultists really are behind their actions and their motives, and they work through hidden knowledge, which is what occult means. The word occult has a negative connotation in most people's minds, but it derives from the Latin language, from the verb occultare, which simply means to hide, to conceal, or to keep secret. And they are perpetuating the forms of control, of behavioral control, over the masses of people because they have them under a form of mass mind control that works through the manipulation of people through hidden knowledge about the human psyche and how it functions, how it operates, and what people's motivations are deep in the psyche and deep in their subconscious. So with that knowledge, they wield a tremendous power differential. You know, with a differential in knowledge comes a differential in power. And that's how they're able to continue to keep people under their thumb and keep their actions in a very tight order of control, because people do not have the same knowledge that these occultists do, and they don't understand their methodologies of manipulation and how they work on a daily basis to basically manipulate them at a mental level and therefore control their actions.
Well, you're talking about basically having an enemy that knows a lot about you, but you don't know a lot about it, right?
Exactly. You don't know a lot about yourself. If you don't know a lot about yourself and someone else does, they're certainly in a position to manipulate you. I mean, the way I ask people to look at the dark occult is imagine an extremely, extremely advanced psychologist or psychiatrist, okay? Someone who has really deeply studied human motivational factors, who really understands how the mind works, who understands how the brain works. Maybe they even have a background in neuroscience, you know, and really gets how the mind functions, okay? And let's say this person was in a very deep state of ego consciousness. In other words, they weren't a very enlightened person. They weren't even a very nice person. They just wanted to manipulate someone. Okay. And they chose someone who really was sort of naive and didn't really understand a lot about themselves, maybe even was a young individual. And maybe they just don't like that person for whatever reason it is. Okay. What kind of a job could a person in that kind of knowledge, holding that kind of knowledge over another individual's head, what kind of a job could they do upon their consciousness, upon their mental state? What kind of havoc might they be able to wreak in their lives if they really turn their attentions toward that task?
It depends whether or not they were president.
Exactly. I mean, it depends what kind of influential positions they may be in, the extent that they could wreak havoc in someone's life. But when you consider that these people are in the entrenched positions of power, they can certainly cause a lot of havoc and a lot of chaos in our world, and they're actively doing that.
Well, let's think about this. If we have an enemy that knows a heck of a lot about us, and for the most part, most people have no idea what they are, I'm acting under the assumption that this is an extreme minority that we're talking about.
You know, absolutely.
The dark occultists, right? And because dark occultists basically don't care about honor or doing things honestly to a degree, right? Because there's that whole upside down scenario where everything that's good has to be flipped on its head kind of thing. So instead of making your way to the top via being a good, decent, honest, hardworking individual, you get to the top by being a bad, dishonest, lazy individual. Now, I think that actually kind of explains, almost in a nutshell, precisely what the problem with the most major businesses and politics and that kind of thing really is now, don't you think?
Sure.
They're just lazy, dishonest scum.
They have psychopaths at their highest levels. I mean, that's really what it's all about. People in a state of psychopathy, in the actual mental and psychological condition of psychopathy, whether it be primary psychopathy or secondary psychopathy, that's what it is. It's psychopaths running our institutions. And in this religion, in the actual dark occult religion, okay, in the ideology that these people espouse, there's three basic tenets, and you see these tenets really engaged in all of society at the highest levels of power. It's self-preservation is the highest law. It doesn't matter really who you have to step on, as long as you make it out on top. Okay, so it's your own personal motives, your own personal gains that you're really out to protect, and that's what all institutional bodies really have as their highest tenet, is survival, is trying to preserve its life, whether it's really doing anything that's truly worthwhile or beneficial to society and truly necessary or needed and serves people's higher goals is irrelevant to the institution and those who are ultimately controlling it. It's all about
the opposite
self-preservation. Yes.
Whereas the opposite of that is, of course, self-sacrifice. And so many people, and I find particularly parents, self-sacrifice to a massive extent for their children and what have you. And you do hear stories about really big, successful businessmen who basically they go out of business because they bend over backwards to try and save their employees from stress and harm and all of that kind of stuff, and they get set up, and it's just a whole big mess of swirling vipers, really. We have a caller. Oh, we did have a caller on the line. He just dropped off. But anyway, this is the thing that I find somewhat scary about the whole system in general, is that you go into any institution and basically you can rest assured that whatever that institution claims to do, 9 times out of 10, it'll basically only be there to do the direct opposite of what it claims to.
Yeah, and again, that's really because it's not really in a position to serve humanity. It's not in a position to serve all of the members of society in a way that ultimately benefits us. It's there to preserve its own intentions and its own motivations. That's what an institution is geared to do by its very definition. You know, even a corporation, you know, its main goal and the goal of its directors is always to maximize profit, minimize loss. It doesn't make a difference whether it has to, cause chaos in people's lives in order to do that, or do it in even a dishonest way. The ultimate stated goal is the continued preservation of the institution itself. Okay, and that's the highest tenet of dark occultism in general, is that whether it is right or wrong, self-preservation is the highest law. It doesn't make a difference, again, as I said, who you have to step on or over to get to where you want to be. What's right for you is what is right. What is wrong for you is what is wrong. And it doesn't make a difference who you harm in the process. The second tenet of this dark occult ideology goes hand in hand with that very notion of self-preservation being the very highest law that there is, and it's moral relativism, the idea that there is no objective right or wrong, which is something I want to talk a lot more about later on in the program, because I'd like to get into some material about natural law and how that's really the way out of these psychopaths controlling this world, is the understanding and application and living in harmony with natural law principles. But their second tenet is moral relativism, which is basically, right is what's right for me. Exactly. What I need to do to benefit, what's good for me, that's what right is. What wrong is whatever harms me or whatever gets in my way. Okay, so if I need to shut someone else's rights down, like free speech, because I don't like what they're saying, because that will hurt my bottom line, I'm going to attack their rights when even I have no right to do that. It doesn't matter. I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to do what I knowingly, know I really don't have the right to do, but I'm going to take that action anyway because it ultimately benefits me in the long term. So that's their whole basic ideology is moral relativism. And then when you combine these two things, ultimately what this is all about, to boil it right down to a nutshell and really concress what dark occultism ultimately is about, is it's wanting to be God. As simply as it can be stated, is it's basically saying that man can actually act like God here on earth and do whatever he wants, no matter who it harms. And ultimately, the highest expression of this is another big tenet and foundational ideology within the dark occult, and that is eugenics, the idea that some people can decide who gets to live and who must die. They can wean the population at will because they deem certain people unworthy to live. And this is what we saw coming up in the Third Reich in Germany and in other places in the world, such as Soviet Russia, etc., and many other areas that practiced eugenics. And the United States had a huge eugenics program back in the early part of the 20th century.
But they renamed it Planned Parenthood.
Exactly. Yeah. And population control, things like that. Euphemisms for eugenics, which is the deliberate extermination of a group of people that another group of people deems unworthy to live. And that's playing God. It all comes down to that same basic overarching principle that man is the highest power and we can decide to do whatever we want, no matter who it harms, no matter what kind of wrongdoing or chaos it brings into the world. That's what dark occultism has as its main foundational ideology.
When you have a foundation like that, something tells me that it's really shaky, but it's not actually. It's actually really strong, isn't it?
The reason that it's strong and the reason that they are successful at what they do is because they have actually given other people their own worldview. They have given people their worldview of what the value of human beings is, of what our capability for change is, of what our potential is, of what human possibility is. And if people buy into their dark notions of all of those things, it's very unlikely that they're ever going to develop the empowerment and the consciousness to get out of their control system that these occultists have built all around us in this world and in all of our institutions. Until we change our worldview and we understand the value of the individual. We understand what human nature really is versus this dark notion of what most people have come to think that it is. When we understand that change is possible if we apply our will, if we make a different free will choice and then actively live that choice in our lives, change is very much possible. Once that fundamental worldview is shifted, that's what a paradigm shift is changing those aspects of worldview. And that's a one-on-one decision. A person makes that decision themselves. You know, they can be influenced by other people, yes, but ultimately they have the power as to how they're going to think about worldview. Okay, and that's what is necessary to really change things for the better in our environment, in our current situation. The problem is that these dark occultists control so much of what people get to see and hear on a daily basis through the media, through the control of media, that they are continuously feeding them the worldview that they want them to accept. And most people, because they're addicted to these poisonous forms of media, have not developed the willpower to break away from that collective mindset. And it's a poisoned worldview mindset, very much poisonous. And it's actually untrue. It's not even a true worldview. It's something that is really based on falsities, illusions, and really just poisonous negativity that really isn't an accurate reflection of reality. And because they've gotten so many people to accept that dark satanic worldview, many people are living their lives as Satanists by proxy. They don't know that they are, but they're living a satanic lifestyle.
You know what? That'd be a good name for a band, you know? Satanists by proxy. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Mark Passio from whatonearthishappening.com is my guest. I'd like to take some callers now on the second segment coming up. 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. Back in a moment.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky.
Welcome
back.
Black
sunrise, always gonna be a surprise.
You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, where we have on people that you may have heard of before many, many times, or you may have never heard of before but want to hear from again. Everybody's got a story, and what we try and do is get them on here so they can tell theirs. That way all the people that are listening to all these various different stories from all these various different people will gain something which very few of us have. Perspective, I think. But we have Mark Passio here, former priest, for the Church of Satan, and his website is whatonearthishappening.com. And we are now taking callers, so if you'd like to call in, please do. Ring us right now, 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. Now, defeating an enemy. This is something I wanted to get into here, because when you talk about Satanists, the dark occult, and all of these other scary, eclectic kind of thingies, it reminds me of when I had Jordan Maxwell on the show, and he says when it comes to researching into this kind of stuff, you get what you pay for, and very rarely will you be rewarded in the physical sense. I mean, it's nice to have knowledge, but a lot of the times, does that knowledge actually help you?
Well, I actually believe that it does, because while I wouldn't say that knowledge itself is power, the application of knowledge can be converted into power. Acting on what we know is really what wisdom is all about, and that is what empowerment, that's what gives us self-empowerment. So just the knowledge itself isn't necessarily what we can derive power from, but the putting it into practice is where we actually get personal power. And you have to be able to do that in harmony with natural law principles. So the first knowledge that you need in order to understand the right action is the knowledge of natural law and how it functions. And I've covered this very extensively in my work, and it's something I want to talk about today because it's so important to understand how this functions. And it's the first thing you have to understand about natural law and why it's very little heard of. Many people have not heard about natural law and how it actually works in our world to give us the experiences that we have earned through what we have thought, what we have spoken, what we have done in the world. Okay, it's actually the dynamic that is creating our experience here that that we must live in. Okay, as a result of our thoughts, emotions, a speech, and actions. Okay, now I call natural law the most occulted knowledge that there is. The dark occult, its ultimate store of hidden knowledge, the thing that it is, it's, I guess you could call it the crown jewel of dark occultism, the thing that it is hiding at the deepest, deepest level and trying to put all kinds of distractions layers of blanketing, of veiling over top of this knowledge so that people won't look at it, won't be able to find what it really is about, won't be able to discover it or how it functions. It is the most occulted knowledge that there is, and that is natural law and how it actually functions in our lives to bring us the experiences that we must live on a day-to-day basis. So,
do they keep that? Yeah. Do they keep that kind of knowledge even from other members of the occult that are not aware of it left, so they can have power over them too?
I would absolutely say that is what they do, because if they deeply understood natural law themselves,
They'd realize all the stuff that they're doing and believing in is BS.
That they're duping themselves actively in the process of even being involved. I would say it's a handful of the inner circle of the high levels of dark occultists that really have that knowledge and actively are working with it in order to manipulate and dupe the rest of even their outer circle, and then ultimately of all of the bulk of humanity, I should say, not all, but the vast bulk of humanity is being duped by their methodologies of manipulation and mass mind control techniques. Once natural law or the deepest occulted knowledge is brought to the surface, is brought to the light of day, is taken in to people's perceptual awareness and then integrated, is deeply understood how it actually functions like any other law of nature, okay? It's game over for these psychopaths. That is what they don't want above all else. They want to prevent that from happening above every other scenario, okay? They fear violent, bloody uprisings and revolutions far less than they fear anything like the deep incorporation and deep understanding of natural law principles, because that would mean that their level of occult manipulation would not be possible at all. See, you know, there was a violent, bloody revolution in this country 230 years ago, okay, here in the United States, the American Revolution. Did it really free us from the rule of dark occultism? Did it free us from the hidden manipulators, from the hidden hand, the controllers, the sorcerers, whatever you want to call them? It most certainly did not. Okay, now I'm not saying it wasn't a worthy effort or something that absolutely needed to be done, okay, because tyranny was coming in here in a big way as England came across the sea and was oppressing the people of this land. But was it an ultimate long-term success? No. Okay, maybe it seeded some ideas that could sprout and become a long-term success, but it was a failure in the long term, because we're right back into tyranny right now. Less than 250 years later, we're in a deep, probably what could be considered a deeper state of tyranny than we ever were when the American Revolution was fomented. Okay, and there's a reason for that, because natural law principles were not integrated, were not learned, were not taught by people who did understand them at the time, and they were not integrated on a societal level. And therefore, this same form of manipulation could come back in, although in an even more stealthy way, in a more hidden way, okay, and take over people's mental processes. And as a result, many people in this country today and throughout the world don't even know that we're living in a state of tyranny. You know, they think we're free, and that's an even stronger prison. The prison without bars is a stronger prison than a physical one where you know you're in a cage. If you think you're free, you're never going to rebel against the forces that are keeping you subverted and keeping you enslaved. So to do it this at a mental level is a much more powerful form of control, because many people will never rebel against it. Because if they don't understand that they're not really free, what's there to rebel against in their mind? Okay, so natural law is what they have to hold us back from understanding, because if we don't understand natural law, we will never really deeply understand what our rights are. Okay, and therefore, when our rights come under attack, we won't put up a protest. We won't fight back. We won't, you know, rail against that dynamic. We'll just let oppression take over. We'll just let tyranny take over. And that's really what we're seeing. We're seeing people sit back in a passive state, watching reality go by like a movie on a screen, and not actively getting involved in their own lives when their freedoms are being taken away from them on a day-to-day basis. And what it ultimately boils down to put it in a very short, succinct way, is, and people may even take offense to what I'm getting ready to say right now, because it's so simple and it's so blunt that many people will say, oh, it can't be that simple. Okay, that's reductionist, or, you know, that's you're being egotistic by even putting it in this way. Okay, and you're being self-righteous.
Well, you're oversimplifying the complicated issues.
Right, and it's very simple. The truth always is simple. It comes down to this dynamic. People have really lost the perceptual capability to understand right from wrong at a very deep level, at a very simple level, okay, on a societal scale. Most people do not definitively know, without doubt or hesitation, the objective differences between right and wrong. And that you will say, you can say that to some people, and they'll take great offense to that. Okay, and part of it is because there's so much relativism in society. Again, this is a satanic principle, moral relativism. This is a satanic ideology. In the dark occult, it's one of their foundational ideological principles, moral relativism.
Is that where pragmatism more specifically the pragmatism practiced by politicians comes from?
In other words, saying, well, rights don't ultimately matter. What gets the job done matters. And, you know, that is, again, it's part of moral relativism. The idea that objective reality and objective right and wrong don't really exist, that it's all about my perceptions of something. It's all about my feelings toward it. It's all about, you know, whether I'm comfortable with that idea or not. And I think it should be, in my opinion, you know, I think it should be like that. I think we should do it like that. And as long as we have this relativistic notion of what we should or should not be doing and what we should or should not be allowing people to do, okay, and we're operating on opinions and we're not operating on the definitive knowledge, the gnosis, okay, between objective right and wrong. So this stems back to the notion that, first of all, you must accept the notion in your own mind. You must know definitively that there is such a thing as objective right and wrong. And therein lies one of the fundamental problems, that starting point. You can't even begin getting to the understanding of what rights are or what natural law is all about until you know definitively that there is an objective difference between right and wrong. And it's not relative, and it's not based on opinion, and it's not based on likes or dislikes or comfort levels or perception. It's objective reality is what right and wrong is based upon. Now, the problem is that most people out there, if you even ask them that question, if you say, is there such a thing as objective right and wrong that is independent from our perceptions of any given situation, they will say, no, there is not. And I guarantee you that. Do a social experiment. Ask people at random on the street, do you think there is an objective difference between right and wrong? Is there such a thing as objective right and objective wrong? Meaning that morals are not relative. They are absolutes. I guarantee you that over 75%, according to my estimations, and I could be slightly off on that, but I'm going to estimate a guess there. I guarantee you 75% of people, three-quarters of human beings will tell you morality is subjective and relative, and is not objective and absolute. And they're wrong about that. They're incorrect. And that's a hardcore statement to just come right out and say, I know that to be the case. I don't, that's not my belief system. I am certain, 100% certain, that there is such a thing as objective right and wrong, because I know how natural law functions. I don't think I know how natural law functions. I do understand how it actually functions and have tested this science in my life. It is a knowable science. It's not a belief system. It's not a religion. It's not something that is based on preferences or likes or dislikes. It is not something that is based on what I'm comfortable with. It is a science that has knowable conclusions, and you can actually test those conclusions, and they are repeatable and demonstrate repeatable results.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that why people are running around like headless chickens these days, you know, just basically their priorities have become completely and utterly warped, right? You know, somebody will think, I'm thirsty, and they'll go to the tap and get a glass of water. Okay, that's a pretty straightforward answer and a pretty straightforward solution. Another person will say, I'm a slave, but they won't go and break their shackles, will they? They'll continue to wear them and continue to even love them. Now, we have a caller on the line here. Curtis, welcome to the program, man.
Yeah, how you doing?
Pretty sweet now that you're here, brother.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yep.
No?
Oh, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you well.
All right, man.
No, I've just been listening, and I don't know if I agree with all that, but it's a pretty interesting topic.
Well, what part of it would you say you don't agree with?
Well, earlier you guys were talking about the tyranny of England opposing itself on the colony. And you were talking about also the Civil War and so forth. One of the things I've always identified as being the source of evil is not necessarily the Illuminati or the unknowns or whoever we like to say they are. It's our system of government. I mean, tyranny didn't end with the Civil War. Tyranny continued throughout the existence of this country.
Of course.
So there was never no end point where it stopped and then everything was lovely and then it picked back up and then tyranny...
Oh, no, I didn't mean to imply that anything was perfect. Yeah, sure. I didn't mean to imply that anything was perfect. I mean, we began to attempt to enshrine the principles of natural law in something like the Declaration of Independence. Between the time that we declared our independence from England and the time the Constitution was written, ratified, and adopted, you know, we were on a better path as a result of, you know, starting to try to live some of the principles in the Declaration of Independence. That document is a much higher level of consciousness than the U.S. Constitution, which, you know, started taking us back down the road into tyranny. People think that the Constitution is like the be-all and end-all and is the solution to all of our problems. The problem is government itself. You know, even in the Declaration of Independence, it says, you know, when government has become destructive of people's aims, they have the right and duty to abolish it and reinstitute new government. Well, it should have just said they have the right and duty to abolish it, period.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Curtis, if you want to hold on after the break, you're more than welcome to, and we'll come back to you. 218-339-8525 if you want to join us on air. 218-339-8525. Back in a moment.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man.
Easter, the show that's all about Satanism being everywhere, man. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island-chained nation and the pentagram containing flag. We don't have 52 pentagrams on our flag, though. We've only got like four, you know, for the Southern Cross. That's about it. But they're red, though. Red stars. Yeah. Like the devil worship. Gotta love them stuff. Some scary people. Speaking of scary people, we have our caller still on the line here. Curtis, welcome back, man. Hey, we were talking over the break, Curtis, about kind of like you called in thinking that you disagreed with us when the reality is you actually did agree with us. But it's kind of like, you know how sometimes you try and say things and you try to say them in a particular way, you try to elaborate so there's no ambiguity about it. And yet, no matter how hard you try, somebody will always think you said something different to what you said.
Well, not necessarily. When I said I disagreed, I actually meant that. But I was listening to his response. That's when I didn't really say anything back. I agree that the social contract is probably the most ideal scenario. But the problem with the social contract, meaning the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and so forth, is it didn't apply to everyone. The same guys that wrote the Declaration of Independence were the same guys that had slaves. They were the same guys who talked about freedom but didn't apply it universally across the board.
I totally agree. I've actually talked about that dynamic on my show. I couldn't agree with you more. They felt that natural law applied, but only to certain groups of human beings and didn't fully apply to all human beings. And I've actually asked the question on my own radio show, how could they have understood some of these principles so fully in some respects and completely, dropped the ball and misunderstood these principles on other aspects of life, especially when it came to other types of human beings that they live amongst. You know,
well, it means that it must have been done on purpose. There's no other explanation for it, really.
Well, it could simply be that they were mistaken about other aspects of natural law, thought that they had the correct answers when it came to understanding rights and freedoms, and had this deeply ingrained notion of, again, this stems from a eugenics mindset, an idea that some people's genes are better than other people's genes, and people aren't all fundamentally basically the same at a fundamental level of humanity, and they were acting upon those misperceptions. So I totally agree. They understood natural law in a certain respect and enshrined those principles, and in other respects they completely missed the boat. What I do want to say about one thing that you said is the social contract. I think that's a complete fabrication and illusion, and there is no such thing. And it's something that is used as a justification to get people to give up their rights and say, "Well, I should live under this type of these type of dictates that are written by this group of people based on what they think is right and what they think is accurate and how they think other people should live." And because I happen to be living in an area that they're currently controlling, that I have to adopt everything that they say, otherwise I need to move out of that area. You know, this whole idea, America, love it or leave it, or if you don't like the laws of man, then go out in the wilderness and live someplace in the wilderness. Well, no. My rights are being actively violated where I stand, and nobody has jurisdiction over my body, authority over me and my actions when I'm harming no one, just because of some perceived contract, social contract that they think exists, and it only exists constructurally in the human mind, or because of some law that was scribbled down on a piece of paper however many hundreds of years ago, or even yesterday. None of that matters. All that matters is the definitive knowledge of the difference between right and wrong and how natural law functions to bring us our experiences. And I'm going to get into that a little bit later, but I just wanted to say I do agree with you on those aspects, and if you had anything else to bring up, go right ahead.
When I mentioned the social contract, you just look at the verbiage, and if they actually held up their part of the contract, we probably wouldn't be having this discussion right now. They reneged on the contract. They abused their authority. They abused their power. Now, right. if you really take it into perspective, I'm not for or neither against, because I've never seen the social contract actually executed the way it's written. If you actually look at the Declaration of Independence and take it for exactly what it says, or the Constitution, you now are looking at a much better society than we've ever seen, but we've never lived by the letter to that stuff.
I say that it would be a stepping stone to get to where we want to go, but it's not the be-all and end-all. But it's better than what we have now, surely.
Right. And I agree, if they actually executed it across the board properly to all people. But they don't do that, as we all know. So in some sense, I guess I do agree, but the one aspect of it that I wanted to talk about was the natural law aspect you were talking about. Sure. When I hear natural law, it may be I'm misinterpreting you the way that you're explaining it, because you said it wasn't a religion and all of that.
Not at all. Right.
I think of animals. I think of animals when I think of natural law.
Okay, all right? So this is a complete...
The natural law of the lion...
That's where maybe I should be a little bit more clearer about what natural law is, okay? This is not what people consider the law of the jungle, of survival of the fittest. This is not social Darwinism at all, meaning that we are animals, that, you know, we should act and live as animals and do whatever we want. That is the exact antithesis of what natural law actually is. Okay? Sure. When I say natural law, I mean the laws of nature, of the cosmos. Or if you want to call it the laws of God, I'm fine with using that word. Some people are not, you know, for whatever reason, but I have no problem with using God's law, the Creator's law. This is the laws that man did not create that govern the effects of behavior. So another way of putting it would be behavioral law, the laws of the cosmos that actually govern the manifestations that occur as a direct result of behaviors. That's what natural law actually is. Okay,
right.
It's been many ways that I have a section where I say, you know, these are the other things that people have considered natural law as. They have, considered it in Hermeticism. They call it the laws of cause and effect. Okay, that effects invariably follow causal factors that are set into motion through actions, through thought, emotions, and actions. And that's one of the ways of looking at natural law, as the laws of cause and effect. People have, in the modern day, looked at it as the laws of attraction. Okay, so what we're putting out there is what we're receiving back as a result of the energy that we're putting out into the universe, into the cosmos. And then the universe is actually acting like a mirror and bringing us the experiences that we need to experience as a result of what we have put forward, what we have brought forward from within us. Okay, another traditional viewpoint of natural law has been karmic consequence, that behaviors carry, that there is free will, but the behaviors that we choose carry certain consequences with them. So you could liken it to karma. And it ultimately comes down to the fact of what we want to happen to us is what we have to embody, is how we have to live. So it's the golden rule, ultimately. It's as we want to be treated, that's how we should treat others. It's as simple as that. That's what natural law is all about. You could call it the laws of right action, okay? The laws of karmic consequence. You can call it the laws of cause and effect. Any way you want to look at it like that. But it's behavioral law that man did not set into motion, that the universe itself and the creator of the universe itself has set into motion, that have absolutely nothing to do with our perceptions. They are always in effect, whether we understand them, know about them, like them, are comfortable with them, perceive them. It does not matter. They are always in effect, and they are always working 100% flawlessly and perfectly to bring us the experience that we need to receive as a result of what we have put out there.
I mean, I understand what you're saying, but you did bring up religion. I mean, you initially said that your natural law had nothing to do with religion, but then on the other hand, talk about God, and then you talk about karma.
God and religion in my worldview have zero to do with each other.
I think that I'm of the opinion that God and religion are mutually exclusive.
Right. Well, I agree. I mean,
about creation and the laws of that govern creation, and have absolutely that has no bearing on what people think about it in religious contexts. Religion is basically a dogmatic belief system that is not a science that is based on the discovery of natural law principles. Natural law is a science. It has nothing to do with religion. It's true knowledge. It's knowledge based on what actually does exist in point of fact reality.
It's the difference between knowing something exists and simply believing it exists so strongly to the point that you convinced yourself that you do know that it exists. I think that's one of the interesting points about this discussion here. Curtis, I'm not sure if you're actually finished yet, so if you want to hold on to the other break, you're more than welcome. Anybody else would like to call in, their number is 218-339-8525. 218-339-8525. Call into the Vinnie Eastwood Show. You can also check out Mark's website at whatonearthishappening.com. And we'll be back for another hour in just a few minutes. Too bad, check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses. Fastest 2 hours in talk radio, breaching the sound barrier and broadcasting on several hemispheres at once. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. Now, I was just thinking yesterday about something Jack Blood told me. He said that there's two main rules, okay, if you want to be able to survive in the truth movement and talk radio, that kind of stuff. And he says, drink and take the money. Okay, somebody offers you money, take it, and if you don't drink, you'll go nuts. And I was just thinking to myself, at what point does everybody seem to actually start to be operating on that exact same wavelength? And more on the occult aspect, I was wondering about drug use in the Church of Satan and things of that nature. I mean, Mark, do you have any experience of that or things you
yes,
can bring
absolutely.
To life?
Yes, absolutely. I can tell you the way they feel about any substances that alter consciousness. It is highly frowned upon to use any substances that alter consciousness because the calcified, left-brained, entrapped consciousness is what they really want from their members. And that's what the educational system, the indoctrination system of the Western culture, and indeed really throughout the world, has done to people's consciousness. It has walled off the right-brain, imaginative, and creative aspects of our consciousness and put us into this linear and purely logical, okay, purely intellect without holistic wisdom, okay, without the sacred feminine aspects of the right brain hemisphere. And this is what government has, you know, put us into, this kind of left brain walled off consciousness, as well as the media. So Satanism wants to keep us in that paradigm of separation. And as a result, any substance that can alter consciousness is looked upon as something that is not desirable because somebody might get involved in, for example, let's say psilocybin and start to possibly use it in a way that can open the door to higher consciousness because that is possible through entheogenic substances. It has to be done with care and with knowledge, and it has to be done in a proper context to use for awakening to higher consciousness. But
it's supposed to be like spirit quests where you're guided by some kind of master.
It is possible to do through many different techniques to use those substances, to commune with those substances, with those consciousnesses is what they really are. I shouldn't even use the word substances when I'm talking about something like psilocybin. Another one is like ayahuasca or dimethyltryptamine or any, you know, compounds that contain dimethyltryptamine like ayahuasca. That's another substance that is capable of really awakening us to a higher level of consciousness when we commune with it. It's what that's called communion for a reason. And I talked about this on another radio show briefly, that religion has made our quote sacraments inert. You know, they'll give us a little piece of unleavened bread and tell us that that's some kind of a transformative thing to commune with. But that is pure belief alone. What these traditions originally came from was the usage of actual psychoactive compounds, entheogenic substances, that were a communion with another form of consciousness that could wake us up to a higher reality. And Satanism wants people to take no part in any of that, just like governments want people to take no part in any of that, because it's authoritarianism and it's a dark world view that doesn't want people awakening to higher levels of awareness. And as a result, those things are extremely frowned upon, and it's said that people should never even go near anything like that. Now,
is that why Satanism and all its dark occult tenets essentially are about basically keeping very low states, kind of like fear, yes, aggression, anger, and also low enjoyment states as well, not being able to enjoy things spiritually? Or I think this might actually be more akin to psychopaths rather than Satanism, but only pleasures of the flesh essentially are the things that get your rocks off anymore, and nothing else, yeah, no spirituality, exactly, no kindness, no loving, no joy. Nothing else that does it for you anymore.
Well, even if love and joy are expressed, it's all about the self, or just those who are close to the self, okay, to the individual personality that you can benefit from. That's it. Your inner circle, in other words, because it doesn't extend basic human decency and the desire for the release from suffering to all individuals, regardless of where they are or who they are. It's all about me being comfortable at the expense of anybody else, or my family being okay, even if we have to, rape the rights of another family so that we're okay, and it doesn't matter what happens to them. So it's all about selfishness. It's all about, you know, the pure dynamic of selfishness and ego. And so many people are trapped in that state. People who don't consider themselves Satanists are trapped in that state of deep ego and only caring about the self. They're not interested in service to others. They're not interested in alleviating suffering for all beings. They're only interested in what I can get out of it and how it can benefit those who are around me that I benefit from as well.
See, and I think that also extends to even making fun of and making other people suffer and enjoy that process, you know. Curtis, you're still there, mate. We have another, yeah, caller on coming, the Greek. So if there's anything you'd like to impart, go for your life, mate.
Well, I can say something on my way out. I don't think I agree. I don't agree with a lot of what was said today. A lot of it has to do with the source. You know, the source of what we're saying is questionable. A lot of what we know comes from ancient belief. A lot of what we assume to be true, we say that it's proven, hasn't been proven. Just in reference to what you guys were just talking about, as far as mind-altering substances enhancing the person, I don't know if I agree with that. But I do respect the opinion of that there's disinformation, there's conditioning. I believe a lot of people, or the majority of people, are in a state of ignorance. And it's
Curtis, let me ask you two questions based on what you've said there. Mm-hmm. You said that you don't like the notion that something is, that I've said that is, it is provable. So I want to ask you a question in relation to that. Can you tell me why you think human beings experience suffering?
Why do human beings experience suffering?
Can you give me basically a short answer, you know, as, sure, to why you feel that human beings experience suffering? Do you think that's knowable? You think it's knowable?
Well, first, I don't think it's proven. I think that's your opinion. But I think people experience suffering for many different reasons, and a lot of it is because of the external world.
Let me ask you one other question based on that response.
Yeah.
Why do you think it must be my opinion regarding what I'm talking about regarding natural law, that it cannot be known.
Well, I
the truth about why we experience what we do, the truth about why we experience what we do is unknowable?
I'm saying that the vast majority of what we think we know is unknown. I do not believe what you're saying is natural law. I believe it's an opinion, and I do believe it's religious-based.
Okay.
And when I say religious, I don't want to offend you and say Christian, Muslim, or
whatever. I have no religion.
I'm saying, nor do I have religious
beliefs. I have testable and provable knowledge regarding how nature brings
us
experiences.
Different things like, I do believe in nature. Don't get me wrong. I'm on your side there. But
let me ask you this. Do you think people can act however they want without consequence? Can they act however they want without consequence?
I didn't hear that question. One more time.
Can people act however they want without consequence, without experiencing the result of that behavior?
I believe those answers to those questions are measured based on a person's perspective. An example would be, some would say that we did the right thing in Vietnam fighting communism. I say it was murder. Some people may say that we were doing the right thing in Iraq. I say it's murder. You know, so it's all about
Did measurable consequences come as a result of those particular actions that were actually carried out in reality?
In other words, if you were to say that Vietnam and Iraq is just straight murder, who do you think's right, you or the people who actually committed that murder?
Well, I'm the one saying it, so I believe I'm right. But that doesn't mean that it's a universal right or wrong. That means the people
Murder's got very specific parameters, you know, the killing, the undue killing of another person by another person. So
I agree.
What you're doing is you're stating a technical fact that what's happening with those wars is simply murder, which means there's no way you could be wrong because you're technically correct.
See, there's an objective reality regarding behaviors. There's an objective reality regarding behavior. There is a knowable definition of whether a behavior is in accordance with natural law or not. It is possible to understand that. It is possible to know that.
And also, this concept here of natural law also exists in a number of different cultures. In Maori here in New Zealand, they call it tikanga law, which is literally translates as natural law. And it's got the exact same principles that you've been outlining here, Mark, is about the objective right and wrong, how the land should be taken care of so that it's prepared and preserved for the next generation, how there's no direct ownership over other people or the planet or anything like that. But of course, there was plenty of enslavement and war within Maori culture as well. So it's the exact same history repeated all over the world. We don't get it right in New Zealand. We don't get it right in America. We don't get it right anywhere. We know what the concept is. We know what the law is supposed to be, but we haven't yet attained it. Why is that?
It's very difficult to thin slice what natural law is about, even in a 2-hour program. What I want to recommend to the listeners is to really extensively go through my podcast material. I have 100 podcasts up on my website. They're all free. WhatOnEarthIsHappening.com. Click the podcast tab. You could download them all for free. Okay. And I recommend starting at the beginning. If you have the willpower to go through them from the beginning, this picture will become very clear in one's mind. And there's lots of supportive material given with each podcast. Okay, but if you want the short version, you want to check out podcasts between numbers 73 and 81. If you listen to podcasts number 73 through 81, I go through natural law, all of its expressions and its manifestations in those podcasts. And you can gain a very, very deep understanding. I tell people, the material in podcasts number 73 through 81 on my website is what enlightenment is. It's what enlightenment is about. No one who does not understand that material and who has not ever understood that material throughout time could possibly have ever been enlightened. If you don't understand that material, you cannot be acting in accordance with the laws that govern human behavior and actually bring us our experience based on our free will decisions between right and wrong. And this is why society is in so much chaos. The more people choose relativistic beliefs and actually base their behavior on what they think is right, whether as opposed to what they know to be right from a definitive science that they have studied and that they have definitively, conclusively determined to be the right course of action. And all I can say is that is knowable. It is knowable. I understand the differences between those dynamics, and I live those principles in my life. And the reason that society is in the chaos that it is because people, one, will not acknowledge that that knowable material even exists. Two, because they will not take the time to study that science and determine the definitive dynamic between right and wrong, the definitive differences. And three, because they won't then put those practices into life regardless of what the current situation happens to be. Meaning, like, other people who think they have rights that they don't are trying to stop people from living in right and make them do actions that are in conformance with what they know morally to be wrong. And they won't actually oppose the dynamic of evil in the world.
See, that's very similar to the concept of how somebody wearing a uniform or an official position can, I think it was like, 90% of the time get somebody to do something that they knew morally was wrong. And I think this is how the control structure has really worked to co-opt the human condition and installing that moral relativism by thinking that morals are to be dictated by somebody else, and it's depends on a case-by-case basis, i.e. that morals are at the discretion of your leaders and your owners.
Vinny, we're in a lot of trouble as a society. People are so far off from an understanding of this that it's almost as if it's beyond their capability to grasp it because of where their minds have been led, the labyrinths that their minds have been led through the media and through this so-called education system. I'm really beginning to develop more of a dark view of where we're heading as a society. I think we have a chance to turn this around. But I don't know if the human will is really there. If the human will to be able to look at reality, not our perceptions of it, and admit that we're wrong about things, that we have not got it figured out. Okay? And I thought just like the people who think it's all relative or there's no definitive knowledge that can actually be determined and everything is an opinion. This is solipsism. This is something that is extraordinarily dangerous. Solipsism is the religion, and it is a religious belief, that really perception is all there is. Everybody has opinions, and everyone's opinions are equally as valid. And there is no definitive objective truth. That's why we're going in the direction of tyranny as a society, because we're not trying to discover truth. We actually, most of us, don't even believe truth exists, that there is no truth to discover, that it's all just relative, that it's all just opinion. And this is not the case. It's not the case. It's not the case. There's no other way I can say it, but people respond to that with ego. They respond to that, hearing it like that, with ego, because they want it to be relative. They want it to be that they can do whatever they want and not actually suffer certain consequences for immoral behavior. The universe does not work like that. You're constrained by law.
All right. Thank you very much for that explanation, Mark Curtis. I hope that's good enough. Thank you so much for your call, and we'll be getting to our next call of the Greek after the break. 218-339-8525.
Bonkers. Bonkers.
Some people think I'm bonkers, but I just think I'm free. And I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me. Some people pay for thrills, but I get mine for free. get crazy by me.
You listen to the Vinny Eastwood Show, the show that's all about getting your thrills for free. Live, thankfully, to the American Freedom Radio Network. And you know what I was doing over the break, ladies and gentlemen? I was just at AmericanFreedomRadio.com watching the little banners, you know, that they've got for all the individual shows, just kind of sliding across the top there. And I was like, whoa, there's a lot of shows on there. And they're all really awesome, too. How strange. You know, American Freedom Radio is just like this secret jewel of truth or talk that very few people know about. You know, it's like the elite of dark, evil truthology. You know, with the scumbaggery and whatnot. Mark Passio is my guest, and we also have a caller in here, The Greek. What's up, man?
Hey, man. Greetings again. I was inspired to call again, especially.
Or greetings, as it were.
It's can you hear me? I've got a bad connection.
I can hear you. I was just making a really lame pun and saying greetings.
Oh, greetings. Oh, I see. Well, greetings then. Well, the relativism is bunk because the senses can be deceived, and there's nothing that makes a magician, someone performing illusions on a stage, more nervous than another magician sitting in the audience that can possibly reveal what he's doing to the audience, you see? You see, they get very nervous, and I know this firsthand. You can see them; their whole act starts to fall apart just by having someone in the audience, and that is one aspect of what's going on. The other aspect is it's very, very simple. I sense some angst in the voice of the guest. It's righteous to feel that way, but I believe that simple objectivity can reveal a truth. That can be filtered through the senses, again, because if you just rely on your senses, you're going to be getting too much static, and it has to be filtered and looked at objectively. The problems we're having on the planet as a society, as inhabitants on the planet, is very simple. It doesn't mean it's easy to fix. It's just a very simple problem. The problem is this. Mankind is dissimilar to any other creature on the planet, and he has abandoned his post as a steward and has gotten himself involved in the capacity in which nature should operate, which is to process. Give an example. Men and women, or let's say people on the planet, are the only ones that bury their dead. In the natural world, the scavengers come by, you see, so now man is trying to intervene and become a processor. In other words, get involved with what nature is supposed to be doing, especially with farming. Instead of actually following natural law, which you can also find in the Bible, and how to do proper agriculture, they want to get involved in processing things they should not be processing, the water, the air, the food, and we've abandoned our post as a steward. But I think
that's certainly part of it. We think that nature is here purely to serve us and that we're not an integrated part of it. But when I talk about natural law, I don't just mean the natural processes of the physical reality of the earth and what we're doing in relation to it. That fits into it. That definitely ties into natural law because there are certainly things that we don't have a right to be doing to the earth as well that we continue to do. But moreover, and primarily, this is the laws of behavior as it is related to how we treat each other. And, you know, extend that to the animal kingdom and the mineral kingdom as well, certainly. But primarily, we need to understand it from the level of how we treat each other and what we are doing to usurp each other's natural law rights that are not man-made, that are not granted by governments, that are not granted by men and women or groups of men and women. That those rights are inherent. They are granted by creation itself. And they're a birthright that we have that can never be separated from us. They are unalienable. They cannot be made foreign to us. They cannot be taken from us, regardless of what anything scribbled down in a law book may happen to say, or regardless of any claims that happen to be made by people who think that they're God in this world and can take whatever power that their violence, their ability to wage violence affords them. So that's what I mean by natural law principles. But certainly our interaction with the natural world plays into this in a large way as well. So I'm definitely in agreement with you.
Now, something tells me that, you know, when we talk about this sort of dark occultic stuff or whatever, and we got into this over the break, is that in order for people to wake up, to realize, to see it going on, and more to the point, to get active and wanting to do something about it, to change what is going on, you got to suffer a little bit. You know, that's basically it. If you are incapable of accepting it now, a little bit of trauma-based mind control is all that's required in order to get you to accept the programming, whether that be programming of resistance or programming of personal enslavement. It's the same principle. You just got to hurt yourself. And the different perception is, instead of you getting hurt and thinking, oh my God, I can't defend myself, I'm powerless, I'm weak, it's you getting hurt and you go, you boys ain't going to touch me again, watch this. You know, that's the difference in mentality that I think that we're talking about here when it comes to the people that are walking around day after day doing the same thing, not wanting to know. You know, I don't think there's anything particularly wrong with ignorance, because ignorance is simply not knowing. Willful ignorance, to actually make an effort to be stupid, is stupidity in the even most uber extreme that has ever been seen.
Well, there's two forms of not knowing that we really need to make a big differentiation between. And I would say ignorance is willful denial of the truth, refusal to look at truth, to discover truth. There is another form of not knowing that one cannot be faulted for, which is called nescience. It comes from the Latin root words ne, which is the negation of, which is where the word negative comes from. Okay, that's a prefix that means the negation or opposite of, and or essentially not. To put it succinctly, it means not. And then scieo sciere, which is the verb in Latin to know. So when you put them together, you have the Latin verb nescio, which is where the word nescience comes from, okay? And that means not to know. But there's a connotation that we have to understand this form of not knowing in, and that is that we could not reasonably expected to have known because the information was not presently available. It was not in our circumstances to acquire that information. So we...
Whoa. Hmm? Now nobody's got that excuse, because anybody who's got an iPhone has access to every bit of information that ever existed.
Exactly, Vinny. And that's my point. We're not living in a nascent society. We're not living in a nascent society just about anywhere on earth. We are living in an ignorant society. See, I want to propose the change of the pronunciation of the word ignorant. See, when we say ignorant, people don't really get what it really means. I want to propose that people start pronouncing that word ignorant, because that will get the meaning of the word across. It means something is present, but you're deliberately ignoring it. You're not engaging it. You know, if someone's in a room and you don't want to pay them any attention, you ignore them. It means you know they're there, but you're deliberately ignoring their presence, okay? This is what ignorance is. This is what ignorance is. And if people even just said the word in that way instead of ignorance, they would understand the connotative meaning of what the word really means. It means directly knowing that something is there and willfully choosing not to engage it. And that's the kind of society that we live in. We do not live in a nascent society, because all of this information is readily available at our fingertips if we so choose it. But unfortunately,
did we ever at any point have that kind of society of what you speak about, where people do actually react and go and do something about whatever is phasing them?
I don't know whether we've had that in our distant past, in our deep ancestral past, but it's possible that we are simply fallen from that state of engagement with reality, and we are now choosing not to engage in reality, and we're choosing to try to hide from ourselves. And, you know, this is a game that is unwinnable. It cannot be done. You know, we cannot ignore reality and prosper. We cannot ignore reality and win. You're ignoring creation and thinking that you're going to come out on top. This is not a religious belief. Once again, people will hear this, and I understand where their mindset is at. I understand how they're reasoning from a total perspective of ego, and they're hearing what they want to hear in my words. This has nothing to do with religious beliefs. There are fundamental laws of behavior that are built into the fabric of reality. They're built into creation itself. Okay, there is law in the universe. It has nothing to do with man. It has nothing to do with man's perceptions. It does not care whether you understand it. The laws of reality, of nature, so gravity is one of them. Let's use that as an example. Okay, thermodynamics is another. We could use that as an example. Does nature care if you turn on your pilot flame in your stove, you turn on the range top on your cooking device, okay, and gas is ignited, and now you could put your frying pan or your skillet on top of that flame and cook a meal, right? Does nature care? Do the laws of thermodynamics care whether you believe that putting your hand in there will not burn your flesh? Does that require your belief? And some people will make the argument, okay, well, certain people have different heat tolerance, and, you know, they can use their power of mind not to get burned for a certain amount of time. Ultimately, there is a law governing the interaction of that heat and your hand, okay? And you keep it there, and you're going to be burned severely, no matter who you are, okay? You
can look I fought the law, and the law won.
Exactly. You know, you could look at gravity. Can someone go to the top of a 100-story building, leap off, and expect to remain unharmed? Okay. Now, you could even draw the wild example of, oh, somebody fell from the sky and their parachute didn't open. You know, they jumped out of an airplane, their parachute didn't open, they fell, hit the ground, and lived. Okay. But this is such a rare example. This is like some fluke interaction.
Have you noticed that? Every time somebody wants to disagree with you about something that's pretty straightforward and obvious, right, they always use the most outrageous, extreme example, right?
Because
like, for example, I was having a conversation with a friend of my girlfriend who's a lawyer, right? And she was talking, we were talking about the economy and about socialism and right-wing and all of that kind of stuff. And somehow or rather, it came around to the point in the conversation where she's talking about it, supply and demand, right? If you, Vinny, have the last bottle of water in town and a lady comes up to you and her baby is like dying of thirst or whatever, how much would you sell that bottle for? And what kind of price would you charge and all that kind of stuff? And I said, well, I'd just give the water to the baby.
Right.
Because she needed it.
And could she even process that
no,
someone would do something like that?
She couldn't.
Right.
Stumped.
Which is a very applicable demonstration of where that individual is at in consciousness. And it's also a very applicable demonstration of where you're at in consciousness, that would be your behavior as a result of that situation. And I would agree that would be the morally correct action to take. And that's the problem, is that people do not think in a moral capacity. They think in a self-motivated capacity where service to others is not even considered. That's where we've come as a society. And that's the truth. That's not my perception of the situation. That's where we're at largely. Okay? And the whole idea that we have to understand the general truth and not get bogged down in minutia and small, tiny little detail that doesn't allow us to see the forest for the trees. You know, we're studying the vein in one of the leaves in the trees and not recognizing we're in the forest. You know, we have to pull back and see the big picture to understand how these laws function. Natural law is big picture thinking. It isn't tunnel vision. It's understanding something from a very high, wide level perspective of consciousness.
But of course, this doesn't mean that it's a collectivist type of consciousness, which thinks as the individual doesn't matter, does it?
It's the exact opposite of that. It places the individual as actually the most important thing, but not from a perspective that you should just do whatever you want, regardless of whether it's right or wrong. The individual is determining what happens in the mass scale, because all the individual actions of free will that are chosen, okay, pile up to create a quantum effect. They amass to create a quantum effect, and that is basically determining what happens on a mass level throughout society, in our entire culture, and ultimately globally. So the rights of the individual is what lies at the core of natural law and natural law principles. We have to understand our own individual sovereignty and the sovereignty of all others in creation if we want to understand how natural law functions.
Indeed. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen. Last chance to call in, 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525 with Mark Passio from whatonearthishappening.com. Back in a minute. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the show that's all about business time.
Oh, yeah. Tonight we're going to make love. You know how I know?
This is Wednesday.
It's Wednesday. And Wednesday,
night's the night we usually make love. Oh, yeah. It's business time, folks. Right here with Mark Passio on the Vinnie Eastwood Show. What on earth is happening.com? And the Natural Law podcast archives are number 73 through 81, if you want to actually catch up on Mark's previous podcastage there and get yourself up and clear about what natural law actually is, etc. Now, caller, we have Andrew in Washington calling. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Yes, hello, how's it going, Denise?
Somewhat fabulous.
Excellent. What's happening, Mark? I love the show.
Oh, thanks so much.
All right. Well, you know, I wanted to talk to you, and you do a lot of talking about the powers that be and their influence over us. And, you know, one thing that I've really found is that, you know, through my own understanding of this existence, we can agree that there's many more planes to our existence than just what we see in our five senses. And a lot of the impact that it has on people has a lot to do, I believe, with what's happening in the astral plane, the planes that are above these five senses, and ways that they're influencing us that is actually very covert to people who are not aware of these additional planes of consciousness. And, Mark, I just wanted to get your opinion on ways, on defense mechanisms for people to actually have to implement for themselves that will allow them to defend themselves on these astral planes and stop these attacks, these somewhat psychic attacks, if you will.
Well, I agree with you, and I think there definitely are other dimensions to our existence other than the five sense reality that we experience. And I think, you know, many researchers have looked into the fact that the possibility, there are beings that are imbalanced on these higher planes, if you will, of consciousness, or if you want to call them dimensions, if you will, extra dimensional, and they are feeding on the energy, the negative energy that is created as a result of the chaos and suffering that we create for ourselves through bucking natural law, through going against natural law. Yes.
Is that what dementia is, when you're actually just perceiving different dimensions there and actually experiencing the consequences of them?
I think that would be a great way of putting it. You know, when we're in a state of dementia, and believe me, we are in a state of dementia as a population.
Especially me!
We're feeding these dimensional entities, possibly. Okay, now I'm not saying that's definitely what's happening. I'm saying that's a possibility that higher dimensional beings may be feeding on the negativity that we're putting out there through our ignorance of natural law, and as a result, all the self-created suffering that we bring into existence, into our lives, through going against natural law.
Well, dementia perfectly describes the leadership caste of the Vatican now, all of a sudden, for me, you know?
It describes the leadership positions
these people
of all institutions.
Well, they're extra dementia nil beings.
Yeah, that's a great green language pun. But to get back to the caller's question, what we can do about that is the same as the solutions for coming out of this manipulation, because the mental manipulation is all part of getting us to vibrate at a lower frequency, which is fear, not to rise to the frequency level of love and the understanding of truth and the understanding and application and living in harmony with natural law, okay? They want us to remain in ignorance. They want us to remain in confusion so that we can remain under control. And we can continue to create the chaos that we're creating in our lives that basically feeds that negative astral plane, if you will, okay? So the things that we can do are the same things we can do to get out of the mental manipulation, because once we come out of the mental manipulation, we won't be susceptible to being used as a fuel or a battery source for those negative entities. Okay, so the first place it starts is what you put into your body. That's the first place. You got to get the physical body under a better control, that you are controlling, that you have a say over what goes into it. So that means getting on to pure foods, organic, okay? Getting on to fresh fruits and vegetables and juices, juicing with fresh fruits and vegetables, not pasteurized juices. I'm talking about sending fresh organic fruits and vegetables through a juicer, drinking that juice. I talk a lot about food and health on my show and what we could be doing in that regard to nourish the body. That goes hand in hand with the nourishment of the mind. So changing worldview and changing the information sources that we pay attention to on a daily basis, so that we are getting accurate information. We are getting information that, if we act upon it, is capable of generating the right results for what we intend, what we say we want in our lives. We say we don't want to suffer. We say we want to prosper. We say we want peace. We say we want true security. We say we want to live in harmony with nature. But we have to change our worldview and then change our actions as a result of the change in worldview in order to actually acquire those things. Action is required. It doesn't just magically happen on its own. Things don't just magically change from the default settings or the default value to get you the optimum return. It doesn't work that way. Willpower is required in order to do that.
Mm-hmm. And another thing that I would say is really important is also networking yourself with other people that are like-minded and forming that support base, so that you can actually be sharing this information and sharing this knowledge and being interactive with your community. Because as you start networking with people and as you start getting around you a group of people that are like-minded thinking, you build a lot more power to it.
That's a phenomenal point. That's a phenomenal point. I'm glad you made it, because this is called vertical integration. It's a different concept than the teaching method called horizontal integration, okay? Horizontal integration is what we really don't want to try to spend too much of our time engaging in. That's like trying to bring this message to, like, as many people as possible. Like, and I'm not saying don't do that. I'm saying don't waste your time trying to bring it to people who are in such resistance. Like, you know, I'm going to spend my time going around to the neighborhood and 1,000 people in my neighborhood and try to spend my time trying to get them to understand every single aspect of all of this. You're going to drain your own energy by doing that. We need vertical integration, which is taking a core group of people who want to get it to a fuller expression. Okay, they really want to understand this and have the willpower to put the time and effort in their own little community. Okay, and then you're building a tower. You're building this huge repository of knowledge, and you're increasing and helping to assist others to increase. You're increasing your willpower and it helping others to increase theirs. So you're building vertically from the ground up in a small footprint. That's called vertical integration. And as those people all get stronger as a community, they can then fan out into their, small nested aspects in their society, and they can start teaching the people around them in their circles. That's how you want to proceed, definitely. Vertical integration is much more powerful than horizontal.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's kind of what the direction I've been going is, building my own network and building my people that are close by me, and having them reach out to people that are close by them, and building it on a very organic basis. And right. that's 100% on point. And I really appreciate that insight.
That's a fractal basis, a fractal way to convey knowledge, and that's going to be the most effective.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, there's so much to be said for that, and that really empowers people to get to the point where they see what it is that they truly are. I mean, once they see the influence that they have on their fellow man, then they can begin to help their fellow man understand that that same power is within each and every one of us. And that's the most important thing for people to get to know, in my opinion, is who and what we truly are.
I totally agree.
It's the most important thing to suppress as well. You know, you've got to make sure that people don't know that. They don't. It's like if I had a massive gorilla who could, with the flick of a wrist, rip my head off, and I'm torturing that gorilla day by day and getting money out of showing it to people and what have you, I don't want that gorilla to know that he could just, you know, willy-nilly take my head off.
Yeah, it's like how they train elephants and they, you know, train them with a really huge chain to not move from a post. And then eventually the elephant will think that he can't break a little tiny cord. He could tie him up with a little tiny rope the elephant could easily break with its strength, but it doesn't ever even attempt it because it's been trained that it can't break that thick chain. But then when the trainer stops using the chain and switches over to a really easily breakable rope, the elephant doesn't even try it to escape.
Now that's called breaking your spirit. And right. I think this is one of the main things that we've got to recognize here about the satanic agenda, is its ultimate goal, isn't it, Mark, is to break our spirits.
It's ultimately to break the will, to break the mental process, to break the attention span, to break the desire to seek truth, and all of those things combined together equate to the destruction of the spirit. Absolutely. That is their agenda. They want your soul. They have most people's souls, unfortunately, but you know, we're here to speak the truth, put the truth out there for people to reclaim their power, to reclaim their spirit, reclaim their soul.
Mm. And Andrew, final words here. We haven't got much time.
All right. Well, I was right in line with exactly what you're talking about as far as their agenda to break their spirit, you know, manipulate people and take advantage of the knowledge they don't know. There's an individual on YouTube who is putting out a lot of information about how to directly deal with these entities in the astral plane and figure out exactly where the control and their power mechanism comes from. If you just, the YouTube channel is called Vezcore, VEZCORE. And it would be something that it goes, he's somebody who's been trained in a lot of the occult practices, just like you, Mark. And it's something that I think it would be very powerful for both of you gentlemen to have this individual on your show and do some talking about it. I don't know if you've heard of him or not, but
I haven't, but thank you for the reference and thanks for the call.
Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome, awesome call, Andrew. And so, Mark, thanks so much for coming on. Every time we have you on, it's bloody awesome, and I'll be on your show this weekend as well, ladies and gentlemen. I think it was going to be on a Sunday in New Zealand, I think. Yeah, fabulous. Check us out, ladies and gentlemen, on the net, whatonearthishappening.com. And, Mark, I'm sorry I interrupted you from thanking me, but thank you anyway.
Thank you so much for having me.